Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, if you've watched a professional rugby game lately, and I know many of you have, you might have found yourself wondering about this rectangular lump on the back of the players' shirts. It's a GPS tracker. Adam Maguire is here to reveal why they wear them, what exactly they do. Hello, Adam.
How are you?
So what are they, these things?
Yeah, they're performance trackers. So if you think of the likes of your smartwatch turned up to 11, basically. At the heart of that, as you say, it's a GPS tracker. So that can obviously give you fairly precise reading on where the player is on the pitch at any given time. But if you have that constant feed of information, you can also see exactly where they've been moving on the pitch. And from that, you can see how much ground they've covered so far, how fast they've been moving. And that's all obviously very valuable information in sport. But coupled with that, the trackers also have other sensors, potentially a heart rate sensor or a monitor, the likes of gyroscopes and accelerometers. And that can give you data around any sudden changes in speed or direction. So that can actually tell you an awful lot in sport as well, particularly useful in rugby because it can be used to assess how heavy a hit a player took in a tackle or the amount of force applied when they entered a scrum or a ruck as well.
A listener says GPS trackers are used also by GAA players at intercounty and senior level at club, and Donal wants to know, can opposing teams access the data, even hack into it? Well, that's what you're going to tell us about now. So what happens to all of the information?
Yeah, well, you'll notice when you're watching a rugby match, especially, every now and then they'll cut to the coaching staff, to the team's coach sitting there, the team of people, and they're all looking very intently at their laptops. Mm-hmm. Some of them will be watching feeds of the actual game, actual camera footage, but some of them are watching the data that's pouring in from these monitors because every player has one. So you have a live feed of tons of data from 15 players all coming in at the same time. And that can tell them all sorts of things about what's going on the pitch, possibly things that they mightn't be able to pick up by eye, or at least it would take them longer to realise it if they're just watching the game. So, for example, you might notice that, you know, one of your players has covered a little less ground in the last 10 minutes than had been the case up until then, or their speed of movement has slowed slightly, or their run's a little bit less explosive than they had been.
The pressure of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or maybe you see that their heart rate is going up and they're not covering as much ground as they were. And you might realise from that this player is fatigued. Or
they should put one on us in here, you know, see what's going
they
on.
Can put a live feed of the heart rate. Or maybe it'll tell you they've picked up a minor injury because, you know, you look at the data, spot they've slowed down in the last 10 minutes, and then you go back and see, actually, they took a heavy hit 10 minutes ago and they haven't quite been themselves since then. So, you know, we know that players are unlikely to put their hand up and say, I'm feeling a little bit tired, can you sub me off? Or I've taken a knock there, I'm not at my best. So it can tell the coach, actually, we need to get ready to substitute them off and prepare a substitution. You know, earlier this year, Brian O'Driscoll was talking about the hardest tackle he ever took. He said it was Wales' Scott Williams in the 2014 Six Nations. He said he was really badly bruised after it. Williams actually ruptured his shoulder and tore ligaments in the tackle. He came out worse for it. O'Driscoll said the medical team thought he needed a HIA at the time, but he was so winded he couldn't tell them otherwise. And O'Driscoll was wearing one of these trackers at the time. It said that he picked up the equivalent of a 27G hit. That's the equivalent of kind of going from hundreds of miles an hour to suddenly stopping in 1 second. It happened in the 22nd minute after O'Driscoll played the full match, though. But he didn't score, so maybe he wasn't quite at his best after that.
Well, there's a surprise.
And maybe now, you might say, do you know what? He took a really heavy hit there. We might need to take him off.
So if he was wearing one of those trackers back in 2014, 10 years ago, like rugby teams have been using this for a while, right?
Yeah, rugby teams, and in particular Irish rugby teams, are actually some of the early adopters of these trackers. How they're using them, though, and what they can offer has obviously changed a lot in the past decade. Leinster was one of the first professional clubs, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, to start using these trackers as part of their training routine. And it wasn't long then until the RFU as a whole started using them. And interestingly, they've linked their systems so that the data being generated at provincial level is accessible to the RFU and vice versa, because of course the players are essentially shared, so it's handy to know how they've been training and, you know, what issues they might be carrying as well. And as I say, initially it was all built around training, so the players wore the trackers and more data was built up. You could see the progress they were making. You know, maybe over months their average speed was picking up, or their distance covered was improving, or they were able to tackle heavier. And it would all indicate their training was going in the right direction. Or it might plateau, which means they need to change. Or maybe it was moving in the wrong direction, which would, you know, give a real data-driven indicator that maybe they're being overworked, maybe they're fatigued, the training is too heavy, and you need to pull it back a little bit as a result. So really, really useful over the longer term, and now more and more in a minute-by-minute setting within a match as well. Because, you know, the data then can also generate information for the post-match assessment, you know, all the way down to seeing, well, we had this tactical plan, what went wrong that allowed the team to score at that particular time, and you can see where the players were at that time, who was fatigued, who wasn't, who was moving fast, who wasn't.
Yeah, well, that Brian O'Driscoll tackle that you've just reminded us about in 2014 is making me wonder now whether the data can be used to help make rugby safer. Does it have a role?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, it can help identify a player who maybe is struggling with their workload and you know, maybe off the pace a little bit, and that can allow a team to maybe catch a problem before it actually becomes an injury that puts them out of action for weeks or even longer, which is good for the team, of course, but good for the player as well. They're less likely to end up badly beaten up and maybe out of action for a long time. A separate innovation we've seen in the past year in rugby has been the introduction of smart gum shields. It was first used in the women's WXV tournament last year, then in the men's Six Nations this year. And it's essentially designed like that, the accelerometer to measure change in direction and the force of a hit and beam that data back to the independent medical team that's present at a match, which will hopefully allow them to spot a potential head injury, because if it sees G-force suffered on the gum shield, it can tell you, well, there's potentially a problem there. And really, the whole injury prevention thing has been the big selling point of this technology initially. One of the big players in this field is Kitman Labs, which is actually an Irish company. They started out being focused very much on wellness, injury prevention, injury management, and then grew from there. And they work with the RFU, the English RFU, as well as soccer teams like Chelsea, Bayern Leverkusen, basketball teams, NFL teams, even the US Army are interested in this technology as
And,
well.
You know, according to our GAA correspondent this morning, who has texted into us, they're used outside of rugby and other sports as well, right across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as I say, soccer, rugby, NFL, GAA as well, Dublin GAA use it in other counties as well. Rugby was kind of the starting point in this part of the world, but Leinster only started using them because the then coach Michael Checa had been told of the benefits that they'd brought to Aussie rules clubs. So they were using them a long, long time ago. Now, though, a pretty common sight in major sports. StatSport is another big provider in this area. Again, an Irish firm. They're based up in Dundalk. And they work with Ireland, England, South Africa in rugby, but also Arsenal, Liverpool, PSG, Brazil. And Dublin GAA is one of their clients as well. They might be a bit harder to spot in those sports, though, because, you know, the rugby teams have the little pod in the back built into the jersey. What you'd see with other sports is they tend to be worn underneath the jersey. So when they're swapping kits at the end, you'll notice they're wearing like a vest top, or almost like a kind of like a bra kind of thing.
Yeah, that, it looks like a sports bra.
Yeah, and it's tucked into that, and their heart rate monitor's in there, so it's not built into the jersey like it is in rugby.
Great to see the Irish companies at the forefront of this technology, because data now, as we've seen, is a really big part of sport.
Yeah, it really is. It's been happening for a long time. You can go back to the 90s and the Oakland A's in the US, who used sabermetrics to find undervalued players. Eventually that became known as Moneyball. But now data and analytics at the heart of really big clubs everywhere in every sport, to the point that being good at parsing this data is actually a very valuable skill and a well-paid position. And it's not just the clubs themselves that are gathering all this data. You know, others are parsing it, trying to understand what the other club is doing, trying to see, you know, yards covered, passes, all that other stuff as well. And of course, this has led to a pushback, people saying, well, this isn't how you coach. What about the fundamentals of the sport? And it is true. We've had cases where someone comes in and promises this data-driven approach and they get it completely wrong. It's really about getting the balance between, you know, the traditional coaching and watching a match and actually seeing what's going on and using this data to kind of supplement that.
We're just after 11, but just to answer Donal's question, who owns the data?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer. It's essentially owned by the clubs, and no, they wouldn't share with other clubs because they're very particular about keeping that to themselves. There is this issue, though, at the moment is in soccer. There's a case, Project Red Card, where they're trying to sue over the data. There was a promise by FIFPro, which is the players' association, that they'd try and make this more accessible to players so they can actually access their data and move around with it. But it's a relatively new area, and there's still a lot of question marks over whether the player owns the data or the club.
Adam, thank you so much. That's Adam McGuire.